Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. In addition to our guest interview, we'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Pesach Sameach, a happy holiday of Passover. Today is the sixth day of Pesach, week-long festival of freedom and matzah. Although there are certainly some Jews who believe Passover begins and ends with the Seder, for Reform Jews and all Jews in Israel, Passover lasts for 7 full days. For conservative and Orthodox Jews outside of Israel, Pesach actually lasts 8 full days, which means more opportunities to eat that bread of no leaven, the flat baked dough of intestinal affliction, matzah. During this springtime Passover Festival of Freedom, we Jews are commanded not to eat anything leavened, including especially bread. That means more matzah for everyone. Now, as anyone who's ever listened to Two Jewish at this time of year knows, your host, me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is not a fan of matzah. I took a survey at our congregational Seder this past week and said, who loves matzah? And like most hands went up. And who hates matzah? And there was just me and like 2 other people. Still, I don't like it. Now, before I say any more about matzah, you must know that I love most Jewish foods. This Pesach, as I do every year now, I made chicken soup from scratch by myself, enough to serve 40 people or so, made 2 successful raisin apple apricot cinnamon kugels, cooked a kosher version of beef bourguignon for our home Seder, air-dried and cooked a roast, grilled sweet chili steelhead, made lots of different vegetables, and so far, nobody died from any of my cooking. Charoset, in its many variations, is also a personal specialty for my limited culinary skills. And in the non-Passover sphere, latkes and even hamantaschen compete on my palate for the title of all-time favorite Jewish food. A great challah is a true taste of heaven. I even like gefilte fish. Sephardic and Oriental Jewish specialties, with their liberal use of spice and chilies and rose water and other flavors of the East, well, those are among the all-time delicacies I love. There are, in fact, few Jewish foods I don't enjoy when they are well made. Ah, but matzah? Matzah is a signal exception. My one area of personal aversion, the one Jewish food I find painful and inedible, is the one food we must eat in profusion this time of year, that ever-popular rendition of baked perforated cardboard matzah, true bread of true affliction. When the Israelites were given the choice between personal and religious freedom and eating only unleavened bread, or staying in slavery and eating bread, that must have been a tough choice. I'm not sure I wouldn't have chosen the slavery. Now, I will receive criticism and many emails and texts professing shock that a rabbi can't stand matzah. How can I call myself a rabbi, let alone a Jew? And it's true, matzah with butter and salt is a fabulous foodstuff to eat. But frankly, anything with butter and salt tastes pretty good, including, I suspect, newspaper or shirt cardboard. Matzah, of course, closely resembles the latter. I mean, the French even cook snails with butter and salt and claim that they are edible. So we Jews do the same thing with matzah and call it matzah brei. My favorite Passover joke is, and I've used this before on Two Jewish, what do you call someone who derives pleasure from the bread of affliction? a matzakist. Anyway, I annually complain so much about matzah before, during, and after Pesach, I have gotten into trouble over my anti-matzah bias. Manischewitz refuses to return my calls asking them to become sponsors of Too Jewish. Streitz's filed a complaint with the FCC alleging religious food bias, and I have been banned from posting by the matzah support group. After much public criticism, Facebook is looking into allegations that my anti-matzah advocacy is sponsored by Vladimir Putin as part of a Russian government anti-Semitic plot. Well, that part could be true if you think about it. And so, bowing to all this unleavened pressure, I have to back off of my distaste for the tasteless bread of culinary affliction, or face the appointment of a special prosecutor for anti-leavenedism. To avoid this impending witch hunt, and as a bow to all those matzah advocates everywhere, and to play us in on this sixth morning of Passover, here's a little more Pesach music, one of my favorite takes on just what matzah is like. It's from the Smooth E, Eric Schwartz.
I feel like a freak, cause every time I pull out something to eat, for this week, I can't do this, cause I'm Jewish, and I can't eat bread. Yeah, my rabbi said only matzah.
Any way you wanna eat it, cold or hot, it's matzah. Fun for your mother, brother, sister, father, matzah. Buy in bulk for a lower cost per box, it's matzah, 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 matzah.
Hanukkah, no, that's over, so you don't get passed over. Get your over to my pad, it's Passover. I'm the mad flow, a smoothie teaming with the jibbing jabbing. If you want the story of Passover, rent the Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston. But I got a question about the bread that is unleavened, causing indigestion. Call matzah. Eat it for a week, we got stuff. No bread, no pasta. Best believe a Jew is stopped up. Now Moses made the matzah when he was fleeing Egypt. Had no time for bread to rise, he said, I just leave it, we can eat it like this, feed it to the Hebrews. But little did he know that the weight would end up equal. Cause,
let my people go.
Became the anthem, get your damn hands up, maybe it will help you pass some. How could one bread rock it so famous when the taste is the same flavor of the box it came in?
Matzah.
Eat it at once, ain't no second guessing.
Matzah.
Leaving crumbs on my lap and chest, and it's called
matzah.
I found the afikomen
in my small intestine.
Matzah, 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 matzah.
That was Eric Schwartz, a past guest of Too Jewish, talking about matzah on Passover. We are commanded to eat all through this festival of unleavened bread, the Chag HaMatzot. Enjoy it, even though I clearly don't. Now, one more note about this particular Passover. As we have said before, it's been more than 6 months that Israeli hostages have been held by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas in captivity in and under Gaza. At our seders here in Tucson, at my own congregation Beit Simcha for some 85 people, and at my own seder at home, we had 36 people, was also not so small. We had a chair reserved with a sign on it that said, "This chair is for those who are not free tonight." We remember and suffer for those hostages brutally kept as human pawns by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas. We remember as well Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter held by Vladimir Putin for no reason for over a year. He's now missing his second Passover in Russian captivity. We keep in mind all those held captive by war and by evil leaders who are therefore unable to celebrate this festival in freedom. May this Zman Chirutenu, this season of liberation, bring all of them speedily and soon to the end of their imprisonment. Allow them to return to life without the brutal bonds preventing them from living a life of dror, of true freedom. From the great cantor and singer David Dudu Fisher to play us in this morning, here he is singing a newish version of his classic hit from the Broadway show Les Miserables, "Bring Him Home, This Time Bring Them Home for All the Israeli Hostages."
On October 7th, 2023, Israel is not the same like it used to be. This vicious attack by terrorists from Hamas who took hostages, kidnapped babies of 6 months old to elderly 80 years old. They're all hostages, kidnapped, held in Gaza Strip. And we are at war to bring all of them back home safely.
Bring him home.
That was Dudu Fisher singing Bring Them Home. You know, I can't watch his YouTube version of that rendition showing photos of the abducted Israelis being carried off by Palestinian terrorists without tearing up. We have a very special version of Too Jewish today, packed with Passover music, passion, pathos, puns, and pleasure. Enjoy it all when we come back in just a moment right here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and for the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services Friday night at 6:30 p.m. with a delicious Oneg Shabbat afterwards, or Saturday morning, 9 a.m., Torah study, 10 a.m. Shabbat morning services with a kiddush afterwards, or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org. We welcome members and all guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Religious schools available for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us for Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning, signing kids up for next summer. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to all. You can go to our classes in person or come on Zoom. All of our extensive Adult Education Academy classes, Hebrew, Introductory Judaism, Kabbalah, Torah, and much more are available. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, Rich Array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught live and on Zoom. Our services are live and on Facebook. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Beit Simcha Tucson. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation community in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail. Or go to our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TooJewishRadio.com, T-O-O, JewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to our podcasts. Those comments help. Now, this is a special Pesach version of Too Jewish. I'm featuring some of the best and a lot of the silliest music of Passover. This is from the a cappella group 613. It's their version of how the 70s pop group ABBA would tell the tale of freedom from slavery, and it's called an ABBA Passover.
If you just rewind,
giving thanks
to an ancient time,
giving thanks,
we were slaves, you see,
giving thanks,
God had heard our plea,
giving thanks,
saying let my people go. Moses came to town,
giving thanks,
but the Pharaoh just said no. When the plagues came down,
giving thanks, giving thanks,
feeling so alone.
Hey!
You know, two special things about that particular parody song. First, ABBA, the name of the Swedish group that had so many number one hits in the 70s, actually means, in Hebrew, dad, ABBA. That's what our daughter Ayella calls me, ABBA. So even though I don't like their music, I have a small sweet spot in my heart for them now. Also, that group didn't know any English at all and had to sing to transliterated texts in Swedish. That tells you just how important it is to know the meaning of the words in pop and rock songs, I suspect. Look, as long as we're on this theme, I have to play this next Pesach cut, which is, you know, similarly unserious. It's from a copycat a cappella Jewish group called the Weistuds. Now, this a cappella Jewish singer trend was started primarily by the Maccabees from Yeshiva University, oh, maybe 15 years ago. They are past guests of Too Jewish, of course. They were followed by a similarly talented, sometimes better group, 613, also modern Orthodox. Now, this group, the Weistuds, is yet another edition of this contemporary Jewish musical trend. They decided we needed a new Passover version of Foreigners' Don't Stop Believin'. And I guess I agree. Here it is. For Passover, don't stop, we're leaving.
Egyptian girl, growing up in Pharaoh's world, she found a baby boy just floating there. All the Hebrew boys Pharaoh wanted to destroy, they built the city seen from it.
Yet another special musical cut on this sixth day of Pesach, Passover, from the Weistuds. Don't stop, we're leaving. When we come back, we will have more special Passover programming right here for you on Too Jewish. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470,
To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Chag Pesach Sameach, a happy Passover to you.
And to you.
We started talking last week about anti-Semitism. You shared some stories about anti-Semitism in the Foreign Service, the U.S. Foreign Service, Americans who had really kind of anti-Semitic attitudes and took anti-Semitic actions. You know, when we think about anti-Semitism today, we often think about, Islamic anti-Semitism in that part of the world, or the Nazis, or Aryan Nation and neo-Nazi stuff, or the progressive anti-Semitism of the left. All of that's there, but there's a different kind of anti-Semitism also out there, which is the kind of genteel social register, upper crust anti-Semitism that was so common and normal, right? At universities, in business, Jews couldn't get into certain industries. And that wasn't, you know, Nazis or anything. It was good old American anti-Semitism.
But the so-called upper crust or the blue bloods always were very Anglophilic.
Right.
The English had the same thing. The English aristocracy was very gently, not violently, no eliminationist tendencies, but gently but firmly anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I mean, I remember dating a girl when I was in my 20s, and her father was English. Went to pick her up at a nice house in Palos Verdes, and she wasn't quite ready. We played a little billiards and had a drink, and at one point he said to me, "I understand you made Carol dinner last week." I said, "Yeah, I cooked her dinner." He said, "Did you cook her Yiddish? Did you make her gefilte fish?" I was like, okay, I know what I'm dealing with now.
It's rare that non-Jews have even encountered gefilte fish.
Yeah,
so it's funny that he made that comment.
He was a slightly knowledgeable anti-Semite, I guess.
Yeah. I think that, for example, at Harvard, it's pretty well known that the finals clubs, which are Harvard's equivalent to fraternities, I don't know if this is still the case, but certainly when I was at Harvard in the 70s, it was still the case. And I think for a while after that, carefully excluded Jews. In fact, in all my time in and around Harvard, the only Jew I know who ever got into a finals club had a very WASP-sounding name and went to a very WASPy, Anglophilic boarding school right outside of Detroit. So
he was almost a WASP. He wasn't really a Jew.
Right. Anymore. So he was invited to join a finals club, but no one else, as far as I know, ever infiltrated that old boys network.
They make much of that in that movie, The Social Network, about how Mark Zuckerberg really wanted to get into a finals club and Edward Severin, his partner, did. And there was part of the tension between them. I mean, it just died in the wool anti-Semitism, really.
Yeah. Since I never cared at all about finals clubs, it's not something that ever struck me. It didn't affect me in any way the comments in my early years in the Foreign Service did. But, you know, you like to talk about anti-Semitism in Europe and how it's different from anti-Semitism in America.
Yeah, I think it is.
But I think you can't really generalize about anti-Semitism in Europe because each country has its own particular brand of anti-Semitism.
Right.
So in France, it's very much tempered by France's self-image as a protector of human rights and the originator of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and all this stuff.
First country to give Jews full human individual citizenship.
Right. You're a Frenchman.
It doesn't care if you're a Jew.
You might be Jewish or not, but right. Right. Okay. So, whereas Germany, which brought us the Shoah, has like the strictest laws against anti-Semitic speech or behavior. And there's no admonishment. There's no tisk tisk. You go to jail. And those countries are both very active in the fight against anti-Semitism. But then there's another question, which is enshrined in the Swiss Constitution, which is centuries old, is a prohibition against the kosher slaughtering of meat. So Jews who want to keep kosher in Switzerland have to import meat from neighboring countries, whether it's France or Germany or whatever. It can't be slaughtered
in Switzerland.
That is true in a couple of the Nordic countries as well.
Yeah, and it's now becoming, like Belgium just voted in that law, partly to push out Muslims because halal meat was also outlawed, halal slaughter.
Some of the Nordic countries banned Jewish settlement or Jewish immigration until the 20th century. So even though we think of them as quite tolerant, and they are in many ways, their history with the Jews is not necessarily so great. Most of them are trying to make up for that today, but it's an uphill battle.
Well, Tom, we could probably talk about anti-Semitism for many weeks to come because it ain't going away, but it continues to be an unfortunately an interesting subject. Right. Thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. And this week, our Passover classic. A blind man is sitting on a park bench during Pesach. The rabbi sits down next to him, takes out his lunch, including some Pesach matzah. Seeing that the blind man has nothing to eat and taking pity on him, the rabbi takes a piece of matzah and gives it to the blind guy. A few moments later, the blind man turns, taps the rabbi on the shoulder, and asks, "Who wrote this garbage?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. As part of our Pesach special today, here's yet another a cappella parody song for Passover. It's 613's A Billy Joel Passover. Now, I must remind you, Billy Joel is Jewish, and during some of the anti-Semitism that has surged in recent years, Billy Joel wore a yellow star during a concert to remind everyone of that central fact. Good for him.
Crowds shuffled in. There's a Zadie sitting next to me, making kiddush for all of his kin. But
he says, "Sons, do you have any inquiries? Like why we trade bread for matzah?
That was 613's Billy Joel Passover. There will be more Pesach music today as part of our special Passover edition. Remember, although for some people, the entirety of Pesach consists of a Seder and a meal on the first night, this holiday of matzah, this season of spring, this historical exodus and time of liberation, it lasts for a full week. So whether you are living in Israel or America, are Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox, or just Jewish, the holiday lasts through tomorrow night. That means, according to Jewish law and tradition, no bread, no donuts, no pasta, no beer, no whiskey, etc., etc., until after Passover is over. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Achremot near the midpoint of the book of Leviticus, Vayikra. Leviticus is centered on the question of how we are to create holiness in our own lives. Achremot addresses the issue in a variety of ways. It begins with words poignant, without being revealing. After the death of Aaron's two sons. A reference to Nadav and Avihu, the two young priests who died in the Torah portion of Shmini, offering strange and inappropriate fire to God. Aaron is enjoined to be cautious and scrupulous in all his observances, lest he incur a similar punishment to that of his sons. Our portion moves on then to the rituals related to the great and powerful Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, holiest day of the entire year for our ancestors as it remains for us. We are commanded to afflict our souls that day, Tanu et nafshotechem. The rites described in Achremot are quite detailed and form the basis for the ways in which our ancestors observed the Day of Atonement throughout the period when the temple stood in Jerusalem, almost 1,000 years. The high priest purified himself completely and then offered sacrifices of atonement for himself, for his family, for his people. He would then purify the holiest parts of the shrine of the temple and bring forward a goat as an atonement offering. That goat is one of the peculiarities of this ritual sequence. Actually, two goats are brought out. One, the scapegoat, this portion is the origin of that term, is given the burden of symbolically carrying the sins of the people out into the wilderness. The second goat is sacrificed as an atonement offering on the altar. Ultimately, after a day of self-denial and repentance, Ki vayom hazeh yechaper aleichem letaher etchem bechol chatoteichem. On that day atonement shall be made for you to purify you from all your sins. Through this process, we are restored to holiness. Much of the rest of Achremot reflects the ways in which we fail to remain holy and establishes rules to try to keep us on the straight and narrow. We are told not to practice idolatry, nor to engage in blood sport, nor to eat carrion, and so on. Each prohibition is another way of structuring holiness into our lives, keeping us from engaging in unholy behaviors. Finally, Achremot is interested in the question of establishing prohibited degrees of marriage. The people whom we are not permitted to enter into matrimony with, the laws of consanguinity and moral respect for those most closely related to us. In essence, the emphasis throughout this portion is on the ways in which we reestablish a close relationship with God and so reacquire holiness. In a world today in which our focus is so far from holiness, so shaped by the daily details of our lives and the klaxon call of a commercial society, this emphasis on the sacred is striking. In the words of the psalm, "Keep yourself from evil. Strive to do what is good and right. Seek holiness every day." Outstanding principles to live by right now. May you be blessed with a Passover of goodness, health, and holiness.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The Biden administration released a call from the leaders of 18 countries with citizens still held hostage in Gaza, calling for their immediate release in exchange for an immediate and prolonged ceasefire that would lead to the end of hostilities. Israel, which has the most citizens, of course, among the more than 130 hostages still believed to be held in Gaza, is not among the participants in this joint call for liberating the hostages. While the statement hews to conditions Israel has accepted for a hostage deal in the short term, it does not refer to Israel's other goal in the war, to remove Hamas from power. We welcome the joint statement calling for the immediate release of our hostages, an Israeli government official said. An American National Security Council spokesman said Israel has been part of the discussions from the beginning and is very supportive. The Biden administration's leadership in the joint call of these 18 countries is significant. President Joe Biden has, since the outset of the war, repeatedly backed Israel's twin goals, release of the hostages and removal of Hamas. But the war has progressed and the devastation on civilians has mounted. Biden faces calls from some Democrats to press Israel into a ceasefire. Tensions have mounted between the Israeli and U.S. leaders. This statement came the day after the public release of the very first proof of life out of American-Israeli hostage Hirsch Goldberg-Polin. President Joe Biden met that same day with Abigail Moredan, a four-year-old American-Israeli whose parents were murdered during the October 7th Hamas-Palestinian terrorist attack that launched this war. And this four-year-old was held hostage until a 10-day ceasefire in November. We call for the immediate release of all hostages held by Hamas in Gaza for over 200 days, said the statement, which was read aloud to reporters by a senior administration official and then released. They include our own citizens. The fate of the hostages and the civilian population in Gaza, who are protected under international law, is of international concern. We emphasize that the deal on the table to release the hostages would bring an immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza. That would facilitate a surge of additional necessary humanitarian assistance to be delivered throughout Gaza and lead to the credible end of hostilities. Gazans would be able to return to their homes and their lands with preparations beforehand to ensure shelter and humanitarian provisions. The signatories on this, in addition to the United States, are Great Britain, Argentina, Austria, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, Colombia, Denmark, France, Germany, Hungary, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Serbia, Spain, and Thailand. A hostage deal, which has been on offer for weeks and which Israel accepted, would trade hostages for Palestinians imprisoned on security offenses by Israel and establish a ceasefire that could last up to 6 weeks, allowing Palestinians, many of whom have taken refuge in Rafah, to return to their homes. It would also facilitate the entry of assistance into the Gaza Strip. World Health authorities say it remains on the verge of famine. Mind you, World Health authorities have been saying Gaza is on the verge of famine since January. Yet somehow, nearly 4 months later, the Gaza Palestinians are just on the verge of famine. I think it would be far better and have more integrity if media reports of the international humanitarian authorities was a bit more skeptical of their often self-contradictory claims. The exchange of hostages for Palestinian terrorist detainees would be phased in the deal that many nations are endorsing. We strongly support the ongoing mediation efforts in order to bring our people home, the statement finished. We reiterate our call on Hamas to release the hostages. Let us end this crisis so that collectively we can focus our efforts on bringing peace and stability to the region. One hopes that the Palestinian terrorists will respond with action that frees the imprisoned human beings that they brutally kidnapped and have held over 200 days, nearly 7 months. Last week, Israel's military intelligence chief resigned, saying he assumed responsibility for the intelligence failures that failed to prevent the October 7th Hamas invasion, which launched the current war. The resignation letter Major General Aharon Haliva sent to the Israeli military chief of staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, is unusual in that he assumed responsibility for the failures even before the launch of the state inquiry into the missteps that left Israel unprepared for this horrifying attack. The intelligence division under my command did not live up to the mission we were sworn to, Haliva wrote, noting he had first told Halevi of his intention to quit at the outset of the war. I have borne that black day with me every day, every night. I will forever bear the terrible pain of the war. Haliva does not detail what the intelligence failures were, but a number of exposés published in Israeli media have said the intelligence commanders ignored warnings from army trackers positioned on the Gaza borders in the months leading up to the war that told them that Hamas appeared to be carrying out exercises aimed at an invasion. Haliva said he will stay on the job until a replacement is found. He called for a government inquiry into the failures that led to October 7th, when Hamas murderous Palestinian terrorists killed some 1,200 people and kidnapped about 250. More than 250 Israeli soldiers have been killed in the ensuing war. More than 130 hostages remain in captivity, although we still don't know how many of them remain alive in the hands of their Hamas Palestinian terrorist oppressors. I am convinced, for the sake of the State of Israel, for the sake of the people of Israel, and for coming generations, that an official commission of inquiry must be established, able to investigate and make clear, thoroughly, exhaustively, pointedly, and in depth, all the factors and circumstances that led to these difficult occurrences, Haliva wrote. Mass protests in Israel calling for accountability and for Bibi Netanyahu's resignation or replacement by election have increased in recent weeks. There have been similar calls from Israel's allies, most notably from Senator Chuck Schumer, the New York Democrat, who as majority leader of the Senate is the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in U.S. history. Netanyahu has not taken personal responsibility for the failures leading to the October 7th attack. He has rebuffed calls for elections. He says that would sap the focus of troops while the war is on. Netanyahu says inquiries will occur once the war is over. Well, who knows how long it goes. His supporters are already building a public case against other people, including Haliva, whom they claim misled Netanyahu. We will see, won't we? A normal Israeli leader takes responsibility for failure, as David Ben-Gurion did, as Golda Meir did, as Moshe Dayan did, as Menachem Begin did, but not Bibi Netanyahu so far. On U.S. campuses, where the money spent by the Arab terrorist-loving nation of Qatar, an oil shikhtum, has worked malicious wonders with impressionable young American college students, protest encampments are now in place on 20 and more college campuses across the U.S. protesting the war in Gaza. These include Columbia, Harvard, Brown, Michigan, MIT, Emerson College, USC, Humboldt, and others. At Columbia and USC, these student protests have devolved into violence, rioting, and vandalism, including at Columbia in particular, where there have been many anti-Semitic acts and physical violence. 93 people were arrested at USC, which has never exactly been a hotbed of political activism before this. Columbia is a complete mess. And of course, anti-Semitic rhetoric has spiraled. Without diminishing the suffering of the Palestinians in Gaza, who are caught in a war their leaders directly provoked, these people are living in an area riddled with tunnels, none of which are available to protect them. There is something crazed and frankly evil about the intensity of the anti-Jewish fervor of these protests. What insane rationale can there be for attacking American Jews to help, quote-unquote, liberate Palestine, that is, to seek to destroy the democratic nation of Israel? How can recycling anti-Semitic language borrowed from the Nazis feed the children in Gaza? Mind you, there is a much worse humanitarian crisis in the world right now in Sudan. Far more people are dying in that horrible civil war than have died in Gaza. Utter brutality is evident everywhere. Millions are homeless refugees in neighboring countries with starvation not only imminent but happening. Where are the campus protests for Sudan? Where are the UN condemnations and inquiries? Is it because only black people are dying in Africa, while Jews and Arabs are dying in Gaza? And where is the pressure on Hamas, the brutal Palestinian terrorists who caused this war, committing massive war crimes, including massive rape, and who refused to agree to terms to bring a ceasefire because they would then have to release their hostages and human shields? It has been a field day for anti-Semites. The casual campus anti-Semites protesting in tents now should remember that lots of Americans died fighting the fascist anti-Semites not so long ago, before Hitler ended up committing suicide in his bunker. This kind of evil rhetoric, the desire to commit genocide on the Jews, and to pretend the opposite is happening when it's not, it always ends with the end of the haters. But the damage they cause takes a long time to repair. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guests will be Holocaust survivor Sidney Finkel and his daughter Ruth, discussing the book he wrote of his own experiences and the importance of remembrance for Yom HaShoah, coming soon, Holocaust Remembrance Day. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person, and the services are available on Facebook. And this Shabbat, no matzah. Our playout this morning is a personal favorite, the great cantor Moshe Oysher singing the conclusion of Chad Gadyah, the classic song from the end of the Seder, An Only Kid. My friends, may you have a Chag Sameach, a happy rest of the holiday of Passover, a Zis and Pesach, a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Chad Gadyah, Chad Gadyah.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.